Okay. So I want to start with a perspective by Rabbi Soloveitchik. We note something very fascinating in the Yaakov story. So we look back at last week's parsha. For some reason, Yaakov has been in Laban's house for 20 years, and you know, he's been through deception after deception. He's been through Laban cheating him. And then at some point, 20 years in, he wakes up after Yosef is born, and he decides, I've got to get out of here. And the Rav asked, well, why is it that Yaakov at that moment decided to go, right? He had been through a lot with Laban. It's not like this was, there had been a tipping point. He just, at some point, he decided to leave. So you could just say, you know, there was something that broke the camel's back. But the Rav suggests something different. He said, if you think about it, if you look at the Brit Ben Aptarim, when Hashem tells Avram what's going to happen to his children, so he tells him, Ger Yezer Achav Eretz Lo Lahem, tells them, your children are going to go to a land that's not their own, and they're going to be strangers, and they're going to be oppressed, and they're going to be, you know, enslaved. And eventually, the people who oppress your children will be judged, and you will leave with great wealth, and Dorevi Yeshuvu Haina, and then your fourth generation will come back. Now that Brit is quite ambiguous. We know that in the end of the day, what it means is that the fourth generation from when they leave the land of Israel, so Yaakov leaves, and then you have Levi, Kahat, Amram, Moshe as the fourth generation, Dorevi Yeshuvu Haina. But there's another interpretation that could have happened. And the Rav suggests that the reason Yaakov left was he thought that the Brit Ben Habiterim had been fulfilled. And he said to himself, wait, Dorevi Yeshuvu Haina. So that's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Now my beloved wife is Rachel, and she's finally had a child, so that's Dorevi. I've been a ger in Eretz, which is right in a land which is not mine. I've been oppressed. I've been enslaved. And now the tide has turned and God has started to judge him. And I now have great wealth. It's time to fill the Brit Ben Amitarim. And it's time to go back to Eretz Israel. Now, the question which the Rav doesn't, the question that is left with the Rav's analysis is whether Yaakov was right or wrong, right? You could say he's wrong. He's not actually the fulfillment, but this is a microcosm of what is going to happen to his children. Or you could say he was right, and as Chazal say, Ratza Yaakov Lashevet Bishalva, Yaakov wanted to live in peace, but the story of Yosef happened, right? One way of reading that Mamar Chazal is that he could have lived in peace, meaning this could have been the end of the story, but the Shvatim messed it up by sinning, and therefore, we had to reinterpret the covenant.
Try it again.
Exactly. Instead of it being fulfilled with Yaakov and Yosef, right, it ends up we have to go through it all over again as a nation, as a punishment for what the brothers did to Yosef. So the question is left in the air whether Yaakov was incorrect in his analysis or was correct, but God had to sort of rethink, relive the experience because of the sin of selling Yosef. Okay, but with that as background, whether you think we had to actually go through Mitzrayim, or you think that that was b'dieved, right, that didn't have to happen, either way, what comes out from his analysis clearly is that there is a parallelism. There is a level at which Yaakov's life is simply a microcosm of what the Jews are going to go through in Mitzrayim. Which brings us to the aspect of that story and that parallelism that I want to talk about. So, Yaakov, when he comes, right, so now he confronts Esav, and after he confronts Esav, and he goes through the whole story, so then, eventually, right, if you turn to the whole thing, right, where does he go? Right, after he finally finishes with Esav, where does he travel to? What city?
Sukkot.
He travels to Sukkot. Right, so you look at the end of that story. Yaakov nasa sukota, well, even lo bayit le umle mikne asa sukot. Al king karashim makom sukot. He goes to Sukkot. He makes little shanty houses for his animals, and he calls the place Sukkot. Now, What's fascinating is the Jews do the exact same thing. When the Jews leave Mitzrayim, the first night that they spend on their way out of Mitzrayim is in Sukkot. Is in Sukkot. And that leads you to wonder. The place, Sukkot. Which leads to an interesting possibility. Because Sukkot, right, all of us, as soon as we hear the word Sukkot, we're thinking, Chag HaSukkot. And every time we do that, we tell ourselves, no, that's wrong. There's two things. There's Chag HaSukkot, and then there's Sukkot, the place. And the connection between the two is accidental, right? Sukkot was a place where Yaakov had built little huts, and therefore, since he built little huts, he named it Sukkot. On Sukkot, we live in little huts, and therefore we call it Sukkot, and that's it. And that's all there is to it, but they're not actually conceptually linked. And that's because we assume that when we have the mitzvah of Sukkot, and the Pasuk says that, I want you to remember, Ki b'Sukkot hoshafti et b'nei Yisrael, that I put the Jews in Sukkot when I took them out of Mitzrayim, we assume, like the two positions in the beginning of Maseches Sukkah, that that either means physical Sukkot, or it means the Anane HaKavod, right? The symbolic Sukkot that God put us in the Shechinah. But there's actually a third position, which is not well known at all. And if you look in the Yalkut, in Parshas Bo, Yalkut Shimoni, in Parshas Bo, I'll read it to you. I brought a copy of it, just so that I could just read it. What? No, I copied it. Well, yesterday, I was reading this late at night, and when Rabbi Spitz asked me to give Parsha on Google. So, and I ended up having a long discussion with Rabbi Foreman about this last night, showing him this, because he suggested this without knowing the Midrash, but I pointed out that it's actually an explicit Midrash. So if you look at the Yalkut in Bo, Sukkota. Sukkot mamash hayu. So possibility one is Sukkot, means a hut. Shenemar v'Yaakov nasa Sukkota, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Right? As we know from the first daf of Sukkah, that one possibility of Sukkot is a Sukkah. I'll skip to the third position. The third position, we also know, Rabbi Kiva Omer, ein Sukkot, el anei akavod. But the middle position, the position of the Chachamim is different. Chachamim Omrim, no. Ein Sukkot, el makom. Sukkot means Sukkot. The place, Sukkot. Shnemar v'yisu misukkot v'achanu be'etam. Because they traveled from Sukkot. Which means that according to the Chachamim in the Midrash, when we say the Pasuk, that we celebrate Sukkot, ki b'sukkot hoshafti b'nei Israel, when I took them to Mitzrayim, we're not commemorating the 40 years in the Midbar where we lived in Sukkot or lived on the Anei HaKavod. We're remembering only the first night. Ki b'sukkot hoshafti b'nei Israel. When I took them out of Mitzrayim, I went to Sukkot the first night, and that's it. We're remembering the first night, and nothing else. Not the 40 years, not, right? We are all used to the other two positions of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Elazar, that we're remembering the 40 years. It's not a specific event, unique, not Pesach, not Shavuot. And here, the Chachamim in the Midrash say, no, Sukkot, Shem Makom. Ki b'sukkot hoshavti b'nei Yisrael means on the first night when they left Mitzrayim, they slept in Sukkot, and that's what we're commemorating. Which begs the question, what does that mean? Why do we care about the first night of Sukkot? So now we come back to our parallelism at the beginning. And we say, okay, if it's not Sukkot like a sukkah, or it's not the Anane HaKavod, it's the place Sukkot, and Yaakov and Bnei Yisrael go through the exact same process, suddenly the fact that the first place they both go when they leave their galus and they go towards Geula, the fact that that place is the place called Sukkot, suddenly becomes very important. Because according to the Chachamim, that's why we're celebrating Sukkot, because of that stage in the process. So the question then becomes, well, what is significant about Sukkot? So, if we now go back to the stories, both stories, let's start with our parasha. Yaakov thinks, or is actually living out, a microcosm of Yetziat Mitzrayim. He has spent 20 years oppressed. He has spent 20 years rejected, away from his family, rejected, dejected by his father-in-law, right, being tricked and oppressed, and all he's waiting for is what he said right before he left. He said right before he left that he wants what? He wants one thing. What does he want? Vayider Yaakov neder lemor. Yaakov makes a neder and says, if God will be with me, which he interprets as God will make me wealthy, so then I'll give Meiser, because then I'll know that God is my God. I mean, he's waiting to know that even though he's in Gullus, and even though he has been oppressed, that God hasn't forgotten him. And the symbol that God remembers him is that he's going to leave with great wealth. Right? That's what he says. Right? Because he says, his response will be, he'll give Meiser of that great wealth.
Which is
exactly what happens. And he leaves Lavan, and he leaves with great wealth, but his travails aren't over, right? He's in the middle because he's going back to Esav. But Esav closes the circuit. Esav is what made him leave. He confronts Esav. It all works out well. Finally, his gullus is over. He knows that God is with him. He knows that his troubles have finally finished. And he comes to Sukkot. And it's the first time that what can he do? He can relax. He can take a few minutes. He can build a little right hut. He can put his animals in because he can now enjoy the fact that God has given him wealth, that God is with him, that his troubles are over.
And it's been fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Right? Sukkot is the place he goes to, is the first place he ends up where he confirms that God is with him. But if you think about it, that's exactly what happened with the Jews. Right? The Jews, they leave Egypt. They're running out, right? And the first time that they get a chance to stop and take stock and realize that God had just performed miracles, God has finally let them go, Paro has finally been defeated, as far as they know, right? They don't know that they're about to have another round, but the Bechors have been killed. It's over as far as they know. The first night where they end up, where they can finally rest and say, yes, God fulfilled his promise, I came out with wealth, I can just sit with all of my, as the Psukim emphasize, right? If you look at the Psukim in Shmot Yud Bet, they emphasize the same thing. They come out with their wealth, with all their animals, right? They can sit with all their animals and they can just relax. That is Sukkot. So Sukkot is the place, right, where we celebrate actually experiencing the fact that God is with us. And Mitzad Sheni, we celebrate another thing, which is, as the Pasuk says, as God tells us, and this is a famous Pasuk, right? It's turned into a song, it makes it into Rosh Hashanah davening. We don't just celebrate the fact that God was with us, but God tells us, Zacharti lo chesed ne'urayach avad klu lo tayach lechtech acharei bamidbar. That God says that part of our ongoing relationship is not just that he was committed to us, but that we were committed to him, that we were willing to go into the desert and trust that it would all be okay. Well, what was the night, right? What was our first night in the Midbar where we showed that we're ready to leave everything and just trust him and go into the desert? At Sukkot, Lechtech Acharei Bamidbar, right? Be'eretz Lo Zerah, right? Where did they go to the Midbar? The first night of the Midbar is Sukkot. Right? So for both Yaakov and Bnei Yisrael, the physical place of Sukkot represents our conviction that even after so much trouble, God is with us and we are with God. So it could be that the position of the Chachamim, that's what we celebrate, is not the 40 years, is Sukkot Shem HaMakom, is the first place we come, is that Sukkot is the holiday where we celebrate our knowledge that God is with us and the fact that we have the confidence to go with him. And therefore Yaakov has a Sukkot moment, and so does Bnei Yisrael. And this, Tversky points out in his article, the parallels actually continue, because Yaakov stops in Sukkot, and then where does he go next? Right, where is his resting place? Sukkot, he stops temporarily to get to his permanent place, or where he wants to settle. What city? What's the next story in the parasha? Shechem. Right, he goes to Shechem. Right, Shechem is where he wants to live. Right, he ends up having to leave after the whole Dina incident, but it's clear that that's where he wants to rest. Sukkot is the interim where he takes stock, and then that is the way that he can then go to Shechem. He can settle the land. Right, that's how he views Shechem. But that's actually who else ends up settling in Shechem?
Is Joseph's tomb is in? No, that's something else.
Well, Yosef is buried in Shechem, right? But why is he buried in Shechem? Because that is the end of conquest. If you look at Yoshua, Perakov Dalid, right, after conquest, Yoshua takes stock in Shechem. when they've conquered the land. So Sukkot, right, in the macro, is also the beginning of their, so to speak, journey to Shechem, because this is the beginning. Remember, we think of it as 40 years. It wasn't supposed to be 40 years. It was supposed to be a few weeks. This was just the beginning of their going to Shechem. So they were also going from Sukkot, and they would have ended in Shechem. It took 40 years, but that was an accident, right? That was a mistake. So if you take it together, it opens the possibility, the sort of tantalizing possibility, that the celebration of Sukkot is the commemoration of the fact that we had the courage to leave, right? We had the courage to trust God and go back to Eretz Yisrael even when things were still dangerous. But when God said the travails are over, we had the confidence to believe Him. And we celebrate the fact that God in fact kept His promise, both for Yaakov on the micro level and for Bnei Yisrael on the macro level. Now, the other two positions in the Midrash don't necessarily oppose this. Because if you think about it, that notion of protection, that God is with us and that we will live with God even in precarious circumstances, is the message both of living in huts in the middle of a desert and in living under the Anan HaKavod, right? The same messages are in fact captured by the Sukkot that we lived in, but the place of Sukkot is what captures the message of both the Anan HaKavod and the Sukkot that we live in, both for Yaakov and for Bnei Yisrael. And I'll just end with this, and this is what Ray Twersky ends his piece with, which is the symbol of all of this, right? Of Sukkot is really, as we started with, Eretz Yisrael, right? Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be the land that represents the exact same thing, right? Eretz Yisrael, as God describes it, is the place which is not supported by rivers, by irrigation, but supported by rain, so we'll always have to look to God, be davening to Him, and be confident that He will actually give it to us. So Eretz Yisrael, which is where Bnei Yisrael end up at the end of this, is the consistent existence of living in Sukkot, of living in a situation where we reflect on the fact that God is with us and that we trust Him to continue to support us, even though we don't necessarily know what's coming the next day. So that's just, I think, the sort of an insight, which I thank both, right, Twersky and right, David Foreman, who both noted this in different ways, of the way in which Yaakov's life and Bnei Yisrael's journey from Mitzrayim eventually to their homeland, how that is enhanced and captured by that moment in Sukkot, that moment where we celebrate our commitment to God and God's commitment for Him, which acts as the stepping stone to allow us to actually embrace settling in Eretz Yisrael with all of that represents. And good.